This is the Breaker.News podcast for the week of December 26th, 2021. I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News and host of the Breaker.News podcast. Welcome to edition number 218. Happy New Year to you. The Breaker is your source for news, opinion, and analysis about British Columbia issues, institutions, and influencers. Later, I'll tell you how you can support The Breaker. On this edition, headlines from the Pacific Rim and the Pacific Northwest. The Is It Just Me commentary. I award a virtual Nanaimo bar to a difference maker. And the big deal feature. The year in review. A look back at some of the highlights and lowlights of 2021 editions of the Breaker.News podcast. But first, is it just me? Is it just me, or did the world become a more dangerous place in 2021? I told you before Donald Trump left the presidency that would not be a cure-all, because China's Xi and Russia's Putin have world domination on their minds. Xi wants to invade Taiwan, Putin wants to invade Ukraine. They want to meddle in the West, where disinformation and violent right-wing and left-wing extremists are a threat to our communities. We have to worry about our leaders, too, close to home, whether it's Justin Trudeau or John Horgan. Their hunger for more power is bigger than their hunger for white spot burgers. Even a mayor like Surrey's Doug McCallum, he's charged with lying to police. The NDP's gutting of BC's freedom of information law was disgusting. In my household, NDP now stands for Not Democratic Party. There were vigilantes who burned down churches after new revelations about Indian residential schools. What a dumb thing to do, because churches might hold evidence about those who were behind the abuse. A man ran amok with a knife around Lynn Valley Library in March. One person died. We still don't know why. It shocked Canada. Overdose deaths rose in BC to record levels. The third wave of the pandemic turned into the fourth wave, and we end the year with a fifth wave, the Omicron wave. Get the booster shot if you can. Keep wearing your mask. The weather? A late June heat wave, the worst since 1925. Lytton, BC came close to 50 Celsius. 6 months later, BC will see minus 20 wind chills to end 2021. We also had a tornado touch down at the UBC golf course, and a week later, the wettest November weekend in BC since 1955. The scenes of flooded Fraser Valley farmland. Shocking. It's a trying time in BC, in Canada, in the world. We need to get through it together. We need to find humor and courage. Thank you for listening throughout 2021. Spread the word. Tell two people. Here's to a better 2022 for all.
What do you think? Email Bob at thebreaker.news.
This is the big deal feature on the Breaker.News podcast. This is the year in review on the Breaker.News podcast, a look back to some of the highlights and lowlights of 2021 as heard on the Breaker.News podcast. It was Operation Slowpoke to start the year for Canadians. While Joe Biden rolled out the Made in the USA vaccine campaign that Donald Trump started, Justin Trudeau relied on imports from Europe and India, and they weren't coming fast enough.
From May 11th in Ottawa, Prime Minister Justin Trudeau.
We all want to have a summer where we can see our loved ones and invite friends over for barbecues. We can have that summer. We can have a one-dose summer.
The Ministry of Health was reluctant to test widely for the coronavirus. It had millions of federally provided rapid test kits on shelves and warehouses. It was also slow to enforce public health orders, if at all. Data was often incomplete or incorrect. It was often delivered too late. Secrecy and spin prevailed. Veteran journalist Salim Jiwa gave a critique during his appearance on the January 24th edition of the Breaker.News podcast.
It is not only lackluster, Bob, it's concealment, it's obfuscation of data. We've had significant problems getting facts out of this government. They like to turn off the lights so that we can see.
How bad did it get? The BC Centre for Disease Control was caught hiding detailed information about where people were being infected and where vaccinations were lagging. A detailed report was leaked on May 6th. Third wave of the pandemic, Whistler became a hotspot due to the spread of the Brazilian variant. Eventually, Horgan ordered more restrictions lasting from April to mid-May. The Vancouver Canucks season was put on hold for 3 weeks when the team got ill at the end of March with the virus. The BC NDP government wanted to return to normal in time for Canada Day. Dr. Bonnie Henry, in a late May appearance, looked forward to the summer.
And I'm thinking by the time we get to July, if things continue in the way that we expect, that we'll be able to hug our neighbors again, if they're people who like to be hugged. I mean, we have to understand that not everybody does, but it's one of the things that I'm missing most in this pandemic. And I've been trying to pitch to the Premier that we should have BC Hug Day in July when we get to that point where we can take our masks off and have those closer social interactions that we used to have with people that we're close to.
But later in the summer, a fourth wave. By the start of November, however, it looked like BC had a chance for a near-normal Christmas. Brian Adams scheduled a New Year's Eve homecoming party at Rogers Arena. Then, at the end of November, the Omicron variant spread around the world, a fifth wave, with daily record infections. Dr. Bonnie Henry came close after 2 years to finally waving the white flag on December 21st.
It is inevitable now that most of us in the province will be exposed at some point. The way this virus is being transmitted, this strain of the virus is being transmitted in communities across the province, it is over time very likely that all of us will have exposure to it. How it affects us depends on our own actions and what we are doing. And we talked last week about the importance of reducing our social gatherings. And the focus on Friday was how to have safer social gatherings. We are now transitioning to reducing those social gatherings to as low as possible for this period of time to try and reduce that risk of exposure until we can flatten and slow down the curve.
The Cullen Commission Judicial Public Inquiry on Money Laundering in BC wrapped up. A final report is expected in spring 2022. Former senior RCMP officer Peter German, who wrote the report that paved the way for the judicial inquiry, appeared as a witness on April 12th.
It's the easy access in terms of ports, airports, United States, Asia. We're very well situated. Add to that the fact that We have a very fair, and I would say small L liberal criminal justice system. We don't lock people up and throw the key away. A fairly, again, small L liberal culture when it comes to drug use. A lot of drugs are consumed in this part of the country, not to say that they aren't consumed elsewhere as well, but it just makes us very attractive to organized crime. And where you have organized crime, you have money laundering.
Former River Rock Casino Business Development Vice President Walter Su gave evidence on February 9th about how Chinese gamblers were a key market.
Specific to Chinese New Year is because we knew there was a huge cluster of people coming back to repatriate with their families. And so that gave us the storefront for when they left and went back and told their friends.
Former BC Liberal Premier Christy Clark appeared as a witness on April 20th.
Do you have a view, given your experience, as to the advisability of a party-forming government taking sizable donations from gaming service providers who the government is charged with regulating?
Well, government, you know, political parties still to this day take donations from organizations and businesses across the province that we regulate. So forestry companies donate to political parties. That's a regulated business. Mining as well. Liquor companies.
Rich Coleman, who was frequently the BC Liberals' Minister of Gambling, was also on the virtual stand on April 28th.
Mr. Pinnock suggests that you turned a blind eye to money laundering in casinos to avoid disrupting an important revenue stream for the government.
That's just ridiculous. There was never, ever that I saw in all the time I was government a point where somebody said, ignore a revenue stream that could be illegal for the benefit of government. That just did never happen.
Whistleblower Ross Alderson, the former BC Lottery Corporation anti-money laundering manager, testified September 9th.
And I saw how many of these patrons were linked into real estate transactions, into other transactions, that these were people with criminal links, and I was getting information from police. And not only that, some very concerning links to the Chinese Communist Party. And I felt that a lot of what was being undermined, I mean, smart, I lived in Amsterdam when I was 22 years old. And it was the first time as a country boy from New Zealand was really had my eyes opened about drug problems. But when I came to Vancouver and I would drive from Vancouver head office to the downtown area to go to my meetings, I would drive down through Hastings and Maine. And what I saw down there, it's just, you don't see that too many places in the world. It's disgusting. And the whole thing to me was distasteful. And I felt that I was in a position that I had the information that this needed to be out in the public forum.
On May 27th, the Tecumloops, the Kamloops Indian Band, announced that ground-penetrating radar found the remains of 215 children buried by the former Kamloops residential school. It shook Canada, and it gained worldwide attention. Who were the children? What were their names? Why did they never make it home? Those questions will take tens of millions of dollars and many years to answer. They went to the Dozier School for Boys Damaged. They came out destroyed. Joining me from Tampa, Florida, is University of South Florida forensic anthropologist Professor Aaron Kimmerly, who led the Dozier School investigation.
Yeah, justice comes in a lot of different forms. You know, we tend to fall back and want it to be criminal prosecution for good reason, but sometimes that's not possible. I mentioned at the beginning, sometimes those who are responsible are deceased or there's a statute of limitations. It turns out it wasn't a crime, which, you know, today is a crime. Then it wasn't a crime. It was national policy. So there's lots of reasons that, you know, our modern sense of what is justice will let us down, but that sometimes truth itself is justice, and that is enough and should be enough to go forward. And then just to check everything, because like I said, it's really going to be about detailed, science in the sense of being real meticulous in the details to get at what is there.
June 23rd, a weather warning like no other from Environment Canada. A dangerous week-long heat wave would envelop British Columbia and the rest of Cascadia.
BC suffered from its worst heat wave since late June 1925. An estimated 300 to 700 people died from the heat on the last weekend of June. It was obvious that the BC government emergency coordination and communications infrastructure was a failure. Even though Horgan often expresses fear of climate change. This is what he told reporters on June 29th.
As Dr. Henry said, fatalities are part of life, and the consequences or the causes of those fatalities are examined by officials that we put in place as a society to make sure we're getting the best information possible so that we can put in place programs and policies to protect people going forward. And again, this was an unprecedented heat wave, records broken day after day. The public was acutely aware that we had a heat problem, and we were doing our best to break through all of the other noise to encourage people to take steps to protect themselves. But it was apparent to anyone who walked outdoors that we were in an unprecedented heat wave. And again, there's a level of personal responsibility. I'm not ducking the issue.
This is the Year in Review on the Breaker.News podcast, a look back to some of the highlights and lowlights of 2021 as heard on the Breaker.News podcast.
First of all, it is not the habit of the government to announce announcements that we're going to be announcing later. We make announcements when we're ready to make the commitment and actually take action.
Nobody wants an election before the end of this pandemic.
Premier John Horgan tried it in the fall of 2020. The NDP won a record majority in BC's snap pandemic election. So it was Justin Trudeau's turn for a power grab election in the summer of 2021. The polls pointed to a Liberal majority. Instead, the Liberals remained a minority government. It cost taxpayers $600 million. Trudeau never did give a good reason for the election. He called it in the fourth wave of the pandemic, during wildfire season in Western Canada, the same day that Afghanistan fell to the Taliban, global supply chain chaos, and inflation was on the rise everywhere.
The NDP says you have the confidence of Parliament. They'd support you in any of these measures that you talk about and all of these ambitions. So how can you justify to Canadians the need for an election that'll cost $500 million in the middle of a fourth wave when you said to Canadians you would not go to the polls before the end of the pandemic?
This is a really important moment in Canada's history. For the past 2 years, for the past 17 months specifically of the pandemic, we've been making really big, really consequential decisions. And in the last election, nobody was talking about what we might do in a pandemic. So the government, and indeed Parliament, needs an opportunity to get a mandate from Canadians, to hear from Canadians on how to end this pandemic, how to build back better in really meaningful ways. As Canadians know, this is a moment where we're going to be taking decisions that will last not just for the coming months, but for the coming decades. And Canadians deserve their say. That's exactly what we're going to give them.
There's some talk of allowing the Bank of Canada to make some tweaks to the mandate to give it a little bit more flexibility to tolerate higher inflation so it could, you know, help stimulate the economy a little bit more in this very difficult time. Do you have a position on the mandate? Would you support a slightly higher tolerance for inflation?
I don't know. When I think about the biggest, most important economic policy this government, if reelected, would move forward, you'll forgive me if I don't think about monetary policy.
September 9th, 2021, the only English language leaders debate of the election, Conservative Aaron O'Toole took on Trudeau over Canada's strained relations with China.
We should be leaders for our values, sir. And you've let the Michaels down, and we have to get serious with China.
If you want to let the Michaels and get the Michaels home, you do not simply lob tomatoes across the Pacific.
September 20th, 2021, Election Day. Justin Trudeau's Liberal Party remains the minority government. September 24th, 2021, newsflash. Meng Wanzhou has reached a deferred prosecution agreement with the United States. She admitted that she lied to HSBC, but she pleaded not guilty. The charges will be dropped in December 2022 if Meng obeys the plea deal between now and then. U.S. authorities, however, say that they are preparing for a trial against Huawei. Meng delivered a prepared statement outside the law courts in Vancouver.
But I believe every cloud has a silver lining. It really was an invaluable experience in my life. I will never forget all the good wishes I've received from people around the world. As the saying goes, the greater the difficulty, the greater the growth. Once again, thank you so much.
3 hours later, Prime Minister Justin Trudeau calls a snap news conference on Parliament Hill.
About 12 minutes ago, the aircraft carrying Michael Kovrig and Michael Spavor left Chinese airspace and they're on their way home. They boarded at about 7:30 Ottawa time, along with Dominic Barton, Canada's ambassador to China. These two men have gone through an unbelievably difficult ordeal.
September 25th, 2021. The two Michaels returned to Canada, touching down in Calgary at dawn. Meanwhile, in Shenzhen, China, Meng Wanzhou arrived to a hero's welcome. She spoke on Chinese state TV.
We firmly support CBC Central Committee with Comrade Xi as core, always loyal to the country and love our career, reach out to our company and pay back to the society. National Day is around the corner. Wish our motherland happy birthday.
Hostage diplomacy is alive and well.
Almost a week after the Meng and Two Michaels drama climaxed, the first National Truth and Reconciliation statutory holiday. But Trudeau made a secret surfing trip to Tofino, BC, instead of attending a ceremony. But it wasn't a secret for long.
But why did you do it, and did anyone advise you not to do it?
I think the how it happened is far less important than that it happened, which I regret.
A rainy autumn on the West Coast, one Pineapple Express after another. in the mountains an early dump of snow. On the first weekend of November, a freak weather system, a tornado, touched down on the UBC golf course on November 6th. The next weekend, the rainiest November weekend since 1955, it led to mudslides and floods. Merritt, Princeton, and Abbotsford were underwater. Parts of the Coquihalla Highway were destroyed. The lower mainland was temporarily cut off from the rest of Canada by road and rail.
The cleanup continues from the mid-November storms, floods, and landslides in southern BC's state of emergency. At least 4 people died in the slides. Gas was rationed and supply chains interrupted. There were reports of panic buying at gas stations and grocery stores. In flooded Abbotsford, tens of thousands of chickens, turkeys, and cows also expired at Sumas Prairie Farms. The livestock death toll could rival the 600,000 poultry that died in the June heat dome. On November 25th, Agriculture Minister Lana Popham gave an update after she visited Abbotsford.
We are closely working with local governments, of course, and the Canadian Food Inspection Agency around the task of disposing and removing animal carcasses lost in the flood.
A quarter of the Coquihalla Highway may be ruined and in need of rebuilding. Transportation Minister Rob Fleming talked about next steps for the 1986-built link between the Lower Mainland and the interior.
The Coquihalla was heavily damaged by the deluge of these historical rains. All told, about 20 sites have been damaged or washed away, and that is about 130 kilometers of the corridor that is affected. This includes 5 bridges where spans completely collapsed or were otherwise heavily damaged. And this is going to be a daunting task to get that highway back to being fully operational, but I'm pleased to report that the work has begun.
It is evident that government did not heed expert reports that called for upgrades to bridges and dikes, and they did not act fast enough when Environment Canada delivered weather warnings on November 12th. Weather warning specialist Armel Castellan explained the science behind the wild weather of the fall of 2021.
It is worth noting that atmospheric rivers, and they used to have other names, we used to call them moist conveyor belts, and you might have heard them as a tropical punch or a pineapple express due to where they're coming from. And they've always occurred, right? We get 20, even 30 of them in a given active weather cycle from, you know, mid-October through to the spring. What's interesting is that sometimes we get more potent, longer lasting events like we saw a couple of years ago and again just a couple of weekends ago. It is fairly extraordinary to have seen this many. Of course, we had a very precocious start to the fall in mid-September, really flipping that switch from the very dry and extraordinarily warm summer that we had and the impacts there with wildfire and smoke inhalation. And now we're on a streak, and that pattern is very consistent into the coming days and certainly coming week, if not longer. So I think at this point we are, you know, bracing for what will end up being probably a record-breaking fall in terms of overall precipitation numbers for many communities along the central and south coast.
The NDP made reforms to the Freedom of Information Law a priority for the fall session of the legislature, except these reforms angered the BC Freedom of Information and Privacy Association, the Information and Privacy Commissioner, environmental groups, business groups, and reporters. The NDP rammed through Bill 22. They imposed a $10 fee on Freedom of Information applications and opened the door to sharing citizens' data with foreign contractors. Colin Gableman was the Attorney General for the NDP when the original law was made in 1993.
If the information belongs to the public, then in principle, it should be the public's information at no cost.
During the session, John Horgan revealed that he had cancer in his throat and would need to take December off for treatment. He made Solicitor General Mike Farnworth the Deputy Premier, but vowed to be back early in 22. The legislature closed as divided and disillusioned as ever. BC Liberal Interim Leader Shirley Bond challenged NDP House Leader Mike Farnworth to put politics aside and tackle the province's big problems as a team.
The leader of the third party and myself, months ago, said to this government, we want to work with you across party lines. How on earth could that be seen in a negative light? The Premier said that means seeking out, fostering, and championing good ideas regardless of their origin. Look across the aisle. It's time to show British Columbians we can actually do business differently. We can be better together, and we must be. So, to the Deputy Premier, when will the government recognize the importance of sending that message to British Columbians, especially at times like this? Whether it's related to the pathway to reconciliation or to deal with the opioid crisis in British Columbia, we call on the government today, both opposition parties. We want to work across party lines on those two critical issues, as well as look at emergency response. Will the government honor the Premier's words and ensure that we can work together across party lines?
When committees are put together, they are done in the context of a terms of reference, in terms of a project. Honourable Speaker, it's pretty clear. I'm trying to tell them that, yeah, there's opportunities, but what I'm getting is sort of partisan rhetoric back, which tells me that you're lost. This is the last day of this session. There will be opportunities for committees to be struck when we come back to the House in February, and I look forward to it.
The bell ends question period.
That was the 2021 Year in Review on the Breaker.News podcast. Tell me what you think. Email Bob at thebreaker.news.
Podcast for Around the Rim. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Rim.
In Mainichi News, Sapporo stresses cost reduction for 2030 Winter Olympics after Tokyo's increased expenses. Wary of the high cost of the 2020 Tokyo Games held this past summer, estimated at $12.7 billion, the city of Sapporo, which has an eye on hosting the 2030 Winter Games, faces the challenge of cutting back on ballooning expenditure while closely gauging public opinion. The city was forced to rework its strategy and present another plan to reduce expenses for the Winter Games, slashing costs to an estimated $2.63 billion. In Taiwan news, U.S. academics say Taiwan could destroy TSMC factories to deter Chinese invasion. Taiwan should consider a scorched earth policy, including the destruction of Taiwan Semiconductor Manufacturing Company. The broken nest strategy would trigger a major economic crisis in China, rather than help its industry gain ground by absorbing Taiwan's high-tech sector, Jared McKinney and University of Colorado political science scientist Peter Harris said. The destruction of TSMC would form a dangerous cocktail for a communist regime advocating economic stability, according to McKinney and Harris. In Hong Kong Free Press, rights and freedoms are not absolute, says Hong Kong government, after three universities tear down Tiananmen massacre monuments. The Hong Kong government has said that rights and freedoms are not absolute, after several local universities tore down Tiananmen massacre monuments within the space of 48 hours. The University of Hong Kong removed the Pillar of Shame statue in the early hours of December 23rd while students were on break. It cited safety issues and legal advice in a statement and also referenced the Crimes Ordinance under Hong Kong colonial government. The incident has sparked international criticism.
That's Around the Rim on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast.
Breaker.News podcast for Cascadia Calling. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Northwest.
Welcome to the newest Patreon supporter of the Breaker.News and the Breaker.News podcast, the Independent Contractors and Businesses Association, which is hosting Seahawks quarterback Russell Wilson on April 26th in Vancouver. For information and tickets to the annual ICBA Gala, go to icba.ca. or call toll-free 1-800-663-2865.
In the Oregonian, City of Portland, other big employers again delay return to office plans as Omicron variant looms. About half of the City of Portland's 6,900 workers have been working remotely since the pandemic began. Many others, police officers, firefighters, some parks workers, cannot. The city hoped to end that inequity with a slow return of its remote workers back to the office. The plan was for employees to begin returning to the office in January, just one day a week to start with, to allow workers to reacclimate to the workplace. But the city announced on December 22nd that it was scrapping the plan. King 5 News. Washington Attorney General Bob Ferguson tests positive for COVID-19. Ferguson said he is isolating at home and was fully vaccinated, but has not gotten his booster shot yet. In the Times Colonist, how BC flooding, COVID-19, led to a McDonald's potato shortage in Japan. Nearly 3,000 McDonald's locations across Japan are being forced to ration French fries over the holiday season after a shipping bottleneck in Vancouver created a potato shortage an ocean away. On December 21st, President and CEO of McDonald's Japan, Tamutsu Hiro, said in a translated statement that its locations usually ship potatoes through Vancouver on a large scale. That's Cascadia Calling on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast.
The biggest sports superstar in Cascadia, Seahawks quarterback Russell Wilson, is coming to Vancouver on April 26th. Get in the huddle at the Independent Contractors and Businesses Association annual banquet. For information and tickets, go to icba.ca or call toll-free 1-800-663-2865.
Virtual Nanaimo Bar, brought to you by Spruce Hill Contracting.
Every week we end the Breaker.News podcast on a tasty note by awarding the goodness of a virtual Nanaimo Bar to people making a difference. A virtual version of the province's favorite dessert bar goes this week to
MC, Amy, Claire, Chris, Amy, David J, Brian, John, Ken, Chris, Lisa, Johnny, and Ian. Brian, Kelly, Leslie, Mondi, Laura, Elvio, Barbara, Richard, Eric, Lee, Randy, Quan, and John. Thank you for your Patreon support throughout 2021.
You can nominate someone for a virtual Nanaimo Bar. Send me an email to bob@thebreaker.news. Spruce Hill Contracting, custom homes and renovations. Find more information at sprucehill.ca.
Vaccine, because once you're dead, then that's a bit too late. I know I'm trying to be funny now, but I'm dead serious about the vaccine. I think we all want to get back to normal, whatever that is, and that would be a great shot in the arm, wouldn't it?
That's it for the Breaker.News podcast for the week of December 26th, 2021. I'm Bob Mackin. Thanks for joining me. Did you know that on December 26th in 1919, Boston Red Sox sold Babe Ruth to the New York Yankees? It took until 2004 for the Red Sox to win another World Series. Now you know. Send me your feedback and send me your story ideas to bob@thebreaker.news. Bookmark thebreaker.news. You can also find us at thebreaker.ca. Sign up for the email newsletter and get updates to your inbox. For news as it happens, follow The Breaker News on Twitter and visit TheBreaker.News on Facebook. You can support The Breaker for as little as $2 a month. For more information, go to patreon.com/TheBreakerNews. That's patreon.com/TheBreakerNews. Happy New Year!
Until next week.